This is Shirley Bradley and Dick Treweiler. We're at the Ari Olds Museum, and it's May the 4th, I think. And we're going to be talking about Dick's memories of the Real Motor Car Company. Well, first, what I'm going to do is just get your own background. Were you born and raised in Lansing?
No, I'm near Westphalia, between Westphalia and Portland.
On a farm, maybe?
Yeah.
Good farming country over
there. Oh, yeah, very good.
So many of the people that worked at Rio also farmed.
Yeah.
Came from farming families.
Sure.
I think that's where people learned how to work.
Probably.
So you went to school over there?
Westphalia, and then I went later on, and I graduated from St. Pat's in Portland, Michigan.
Oh, sure. And where did you go from there?
I went to the Army. Got married, went in the Army, and it was one of these six-month deals that I had signed up for. And I got honors there. I got the highest proficiency test out of 150 guys. And I did not re-up for active duty. I stayed in with the Guard or the Reserves at that time. Well, then after that, I worked for a Dodge Plymouth dealer for a while, Chrysler dealer. And then I eventually went to work for Diamond Rio.
That's going to be my next question. When did you go there and why did you go there?
Well, I went to Rio because I was laid off from my current job that I was with at TRW at that time. I was working for them for about 6 months, and then they worked slowed up, so they laid me off. I didn't have anything to do, you know. I needed a job. I was married and everything. So
sure.
My brother worked at Rio in engineering. So I asked them if they had any, and they said, well, come and check anyway. So I went in the personnel department, and they needed repairmen, which I did repair. So they sent me down and repair for about the next 6 years.
So you were in the repair department. What kind of things were you repairing?
The trucks, they needed various repairs that they came off the assembly line. There was 150 of us guys that did repairs. I worked for a period of time on military trucks, and then after that on commercial trucks.
Sort of repairs if something had got broken during on the production line?
Sometimes the parts didn't get put on, too.
Oh.
I got to do that, and they called us repairmen. And once in a while, there would be a transmission or something that had a problem. They'd have to pull it out and put a new one in. But a lot of it had to do with putting parts on that didn't get put on, some of which hadn't even been engineered yet. And so we had to do a little of our own engineering.
Is that right?
Yeah. Exhaust systems. I made a lot of exhaust systems. I didn't physically make the exhaust, but I told the welder where to put the exhaust, or, you know, where to weld it, how that. And then I would assemble it then at that time. So
you were an engineer, really?
Well, sometimes we were,
yeah.
Yes. Sometimes.
And then when you finished the job, it went back to an inspection or something?
Yeah,
or?
I was a road tester for Diamond Rio, road tested their trucks.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, and there was about five of us road testers. And we eventually, a White Motor Company owned us by that time.
Mm.
And they were after our president about quality control. So he put all of us guys on what he called the audit team. And we answered directly to him. He was our only boss at that time. And he told us not to road test any trucks, not to let any trucks get out that weren't absolutely perfect. So that's what we did.
So did that was kind of time-consuming, making sure that everything was...
Well, yes, it was, because there's times that the production people didn't have things in perfect condition. And so we'd have to just tell them, well, you can't ship that truck until it is. And so... But when I was road testing trucks, I remember a magazine by the name of Overdrive. They came out to check our quality, because our managers wanted, the management wanted, you know, some publicity. And so they sent Overdrive magazine sent a guy out, and they chose me to be the guy to ride with and to check and see what we did. And it was kind of interesting, because we took off with this truck, and And I did my usually look over truck and write up whatever I saw wrong, and then I'd stop again about part of the way through. And we get up on 96, and I got it up to about 70 miles an hour, rolling along, and all of a sudden I look, and antifreeze was going out the back like crazy, and the little radiator was. And I said to the guy, I says, "We're not going to make it back to this truck." And he said, "Why?" I said, "I just blew the radiator hose." And he looked over at the temperature gauge, and of course it hadn't even started going up yet. I already spotted it, shut it off, got it off to the side before it got overheated or anything. And I said, "Well," he said, "what are we doing?" I said, "We'll wait for the next road tester to come along, and we'll take a ride back." And they'll come, wrecker, come and get this truck. And
Rio had their own wreckers?
Yeah, we had a couple of wreckers. Well, mainly one, just for hauling vehicles in and out if there was some kind of a problem.
Oh, I see.
And I had to think fast when I'm with this guy, and he's checking our classes. "Well, this is the reason why we've got the quality control we do, because we road test them, and if they aren't ready for the customer, and if this one wasn't ready yet, and that's, we caught it before it got to the customer."
Well, really, in a way, that was fortuitous, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
He really got the picture instead of everything being rosy.
He wrote it up that way, too, in the Overdrive magazine. He kind of wrote it up that way.
Have you got a copy of that magazine?
Yeah, it's somewhere.
I just wondered if they gave you
one. Sure, I have a copy of it.
Great.
And that was... It was a fun place to work. I did a lot of fun things.
Like?
Well, one time I was road testing a military truck, and I got out by 96 and Martin Luther King now.
Uh-huh.
And I stopped underneath the viaduct to write up some items that I had found wrong on the road test. And all of a sudden in the mirror, I could cut this thing whizzing by back and forth, and here was a mother duck going back and forth at about car level, and I thought, "Well, that ridiculous duck is going to get killed." I kept watching. Finally, I got out, and I was wondering what I was so concerned about. And I walked back, and here, in one of these big manholes, there was a grate with grates, big enough. And the mother duck went, and 12 of her babies fell through the holes into this manhole.
I wonder, family.
Well, yeah, the whole family. So she was really upset. She was running back and forth. There was water on both, at least on the one side of the Martin Luther King. And so another road tester pulled up, and I said, "We ought to try and do something about this." So we went to the gas station down the street and got a crowbar. We talked to the crowbar, and we pried that thing open. Luckily, the manhole didn't have a lot of water in it or anything. So I said, "Well, Every time I'd go to try and get the little ducks, they'd run away from me, down into the hole a little farther. And that mother duck going zoom back and forth, like, "What are you doing to my babies?" And next thing you know, here was a cop, and here was a state journal, and everybody was out there.
Really?
Yeah. And so I told the cop, I said, "I'm going to dive into that hole," because I said, "The only way they're going to, I'm not going to be able to get them real easily." And so I said, "I'll go quack, quack, quack." And I did, and they'd come running up, and I said, "You catch my belt," and I dove in, and I'd get four or five at a time, or three or whatever, and I'd take them over to the mother, and the mother, she was squiggling back and forth. And then the cop went in once, and he tried to, So we had a whole bunch of us out there,
Oh, that's marvelous.
I think the managers probably thought, "Oh boy, he must have rolled this one over or something."
Because he hasn't come back, he hasn't come back.
Now what did he do?
And no cell phones then.
No.
So you couldn't let them know, "I'm out here rescuing
your
family."
I had a big article in the paper about it, They showed pictures of all of us out there.
Oh, about when would that have been, do you think?
64, I think it was.
64?
Yeah.
Oh, my. That's fun.
There's a lot of things happen like that were fun.
Oh, you bet.
And another thing about road testing that was fun is that, I went to community college. I decided I'd go to community college, right, upgrade my education and job and everything else. So while I was road testing trucks, there's times I could stop. And there was times when there wasn't trucks to road test. And because I was in the union, they wouldn't let you do anything else.
Oh, I see.
But you had to sit there and wait. So I'd study then. And I had a speech class, You always have to have a speech class. And I'm road testing this truck, and I'm giving myself the speech that I'm going to give, People go by and they look up at me like, "I think I'm going to get out of here. This guy's crazy."
He's talking to himself.
Yeah.
So you got a degree from LCC?
Yeah, I got an associate degree.
Social degree.
Associate, yeah. It was supposed to be industrial engineering, but I missed one physics class. And that's when Diamond Rio, I actually graduated with a general, and Diamond Rio then decided that they wanted to have me in management. And so that's when I went into the service department to work as a technical service manager.
Oh, now what does a technical service manager do?
Well, actually, a technical service representative at that time.
Oh, representative.
And that was the most interesting job of all.
Really? Why? Yes.
Well, I'm just that kind of person. I'm getting tons of calls from the field, from either customers or dealers, and they always have a problem that they needed solved. And I would go and have to solve that problem for them. It's just right up my alley. It's the kind of thing I just love to do. And the other thing of it is, everybody in that plant, engineering, quality control, were so cooperative. If I went to engineering and said, hey, I've got this problem, what can I do? You know, they would work with me. They drop whatever they're doing. They've got to fix a customer. That's all there's to it.
Right.
I mean, this is a truck that's running or not running nil. And they said, we gotta take care of this customer. So they would bend over backwards to help me. We'd get prints out, you know, and the engineers would help me, you know, this way and that way. And so it was really a lot of fun because, you know, it's really nice to make somebody at the other end of the line feel good that they got their problem resolved.
And you would feel like you've done a good job.
Oh, yeah. That's very, very
satisfying.
A sense of accomplishment. Yeah. Very enjoyable.
People from all over that had bought a truck.
Yeah.
Companies.
Our dealers, you know, sometimes dealers would call that have a truck in the shop. And, well, like one guy, I'll never forget, some of these garbage haulers, which we sold a lot of trucks to garbage haulers out in the East Coast area. And
where, I'm sorry?
East Coast.
Oh, in the East Coast.
Yeah, like New York, New Jersey, through there. Well, this one guy kept going through all neighbors. And they just fail. They would come apart and fail. And so I talked with him, the dealer at Lincoln. I said, well, you know, this guy revs this engine up a lot at a slow speed, and he's not going to need to have worry about going down the road. He's just going to go short runs here and there. But I said, and that alternator was a early usage that we had in that. We hadn't used that alternator a lot. I think it was Leasonville alternator, if I remember right. And so I told the dealer, I said, you know, why couldn't we put a bigger pulley on that and slow that alternator down a little bit? And that way the alternator probably lived a lot longer. And the battery's going to go down because he's always got it revved up enough in between. And so he said, I don't know, that will work good. So I went and dug and got prints out, all the different prints of the different alternators. So I had to check the size, you know, the diameter inside for the shaft, for the outside, and the belt, the shivs on the belt, you know, the size of the belt that it would take. And I came up with one, and I sent it to the guy, and they took it, and they never hit alternator failures after that. So things like that really make you feel good, do you? Did some good and helped some people. And
would that become standard then for trucks that are having that kind of usage?
No.
No, that was just a special case.
Not necessarily, but I was, you know, I would tell the engineers about what I did, and then I'd just leave it up to them to decide, what they should do about the trucks, future trucks. And sometimes they would take what fixes I put on and would adopt them, but sometimes they wouldn't, you know, for whatever reason.
But isn't that nice that it was a cooperative area?
I think that was special in Rio. It was. If there was a customer out there that had a problem, I don't care. They were there to help him. One of the president of the company asked me to chair a committee, and it was like a quality control committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I was pretty naive yet at that time. I thought, anyway, here I had the head engineer on my committee. I had the head quality control guy, the head purchaser, all the heads of all the departments in my committee. And
wow.
I would bring the complaints from the field, you know, and then we'd sit down and discuss those complaints. And, you know, I'd just say, oh, here's a problem, you know, who wants to take and research this to see what's best to do? And boy, they would just all volunteer just like that. I mean, I wouldn't have to tell anybody to do anything. They would just volunteer and take it and do it. And I'd write the minutes up for the whole thing. This was a weekly meeting. And So I said, it was a pleasure to work there. And I got such an education myself.
Did you?
Oh, tremendous. I was 20 years old when I started there. And
I was going to ask you that. You were 20 when you started.
Yeah. So I got just a phenomenal education that I really, really appreciated working for that company.
So about what year did you hire in, do you think?
1960. Yeah.
And you were there until?
75 when they closed the door.
When they closed the door, put the padlock on.
Yeah.
That wasn't a good day, was it?
No. It wasn't a good day for quite a while because you could see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah. People lost their pensions and.
Yeah. And I was lucky. I was 35 years old. I went and had another career after that. Yeah.
Oh, you were young enough and you had all this background.
Yeah.
Where did you go to from that?
I went for a year, year and a half to a service manager out of University of Olds.
Oh.
GMC. Mm-hmm. And that experience went to help because I applied to a GMC truck as a field representative, and they hired me. So I was in the field working out in Wisconsin, traveling to stay in Wisconsin for them as a field service representative, engineer, whatever.
So you had to move the family to Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah. I had to move to, we moved to a nice little town called Port Washington, Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh.
Beautiful.
I knew that town.
Do you know it? Isn't that a cute, nice little
there.
Town?
Yes.
You got family there?
No. Actually, I guess I better shut this off because they won't be interested. So you said that you had a brother that worked at Rio.
Yes.
Did you have any other relatives that worked there?
No, just my brother Charles, and he only worked there for a couple of years and then went to Oldsmobile.
And he went to Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember in the beginning when you were in there who you worked for in that, what was it, repair department?
Yeah, repair department.
Well,
the guy who was in charge of the whole thing, his name was Vance Disbrough.
Disbrough?
Yeah, Disbrough. And he's dead now.
I see.
But they were, had a lot of different foremen. I mean, it's...
came and went.
Yeah, it came and went. There was, it seemed like every time we turned around, it was a new one.
So somebody new to adjust to?
Yeah, constantly.
Let's see. Oh, I was going to ask what kind of training you received, but I already guess we covered that because you came to Rio with the experience of knowing how to...
Some, yeah. I mean, it wasn't, I had worked for an independent garage repair when I was started when I was 16 in high school and worked part-time for him. And he did show me an awful lot of things that I needed to know about repair and stuff. And then I went from there to another dealer for a couple months before I went in the Army. So I didn't have a ton of experience, but I had a little bit.
You had.
And then when I went to Diamond Rio first, and I learned the heavy duty truck business too.
And they taught you, someone there trained you?
Well, you worked with somebody all the time.
Oh,
and
okay.
You just basically learned how to one way or another do it.
And if you have an aptitude for it, and apparently you do.
Yeah, that was a good thing.
Let's talk a little about the working conditions, safety-wise, brakes, benefits, that sort of thing. You don't recall any, shall I say, problems with safety equipment or?
Not really. I was never really asked to do anything that was unsafe. I knew of some people that had gotten hurt, but, you know, a lot of it was fault of their own. And one guy got killed, as a matter of fact, on a set of rolls. I mean, they were always told, the guys that ran these trucks on the rolls, you know, that not to get out of the truck. And this guy heard a noise, I guess, apparently back on an axle. And he got off. He was a real conscientious person. And he went and stepped in between the duals, and the truck was running 60 miles an hour. And the rear tire caught his pant leg or something and took him right through him. Killed him instantly.
Oh, mercy.
That was sad. I went over to see that. And the guys you're going to interview sometime later, Tom Moorfield, he was your buddy.
Yeah, so, I'm talking with him tomorrow.
Yeah.
It was a friend of his?
Oh, yeah. They worked together on the same job.
Oh, dear.
So, I mean, like I say, no, I didn't think there was ever any safety issues.
Okay. What about your pay? When you went from one department up to the next, did you get a pay increase?
Oh, yes.
Were you on salary?
The only time I was on salary is when I went in.
Kevin and I found him the other day in here someplace.
You were mentioning to me, we were talking about safety issues.
Yeah. Well, one issue that most of the time it was very safe to work at Rio, but on the road, anything could come up. And one time I can remember going to the Brooklyn, New York dealership, and the while I was there, there was a customer that had a cab bracket break on about a three-year-old truck, and of course our trucks were only warranted for 1 year at that time. And this guy was a garbage hauler, and very Italian-like, and the dealer said, well, could we do anything for him? And I said, no, the truck's too old and too many miles, you know. And so after a little while, I was over in some corner of the dealership looking at something, and this guy comes over, the customer comes over to me, and he says, say, are you the factory guy? I said, yeah. He says, well, that's my truck over there that needs that cab rack. And he says, that's going to be a pretty expensive repair. He says, don't you think you ought to pay for some of that? And I said, well, no, sir. I said, I don't think I can because the truck's way too old. It's way over, you know, anything we could consider. He says, well, and he pulled back his coat, and here's a pistol. He says, now, he says, don't you think you ought to pay for that? And I said, gee, it's pretty old. He says, sir, I'm telling you, don't you think you ought to pay for that? Look at that old lady. I said, well, maybe I ought to pay for the part. He said, okay. He pulls his coat back, and he leaves, and I'm about a half an hour later, I'm walking over to another corner of the dealership, and he comes over and he says, say, he says, Mr. Factory Guy, he says, I think you ought to pay for the labor. He said, that's pretty expensive labor. I said, well, sir, I told you, you know, truck is out of warranty. Pulled back the other side of his coat, and here's a set of bullets. And he pulls one out, and he says, you ever seen one of those looks like going through a body? I said, no, and I don't want to find out either.
My God.
And he says, now don't you think you ought to pay for the labor? And I said, I had finally thought fast, and I said, well, sir, I don't have the authority to do that. My boss is the only one that can give me the authority to do that. And I said, he's not in the office right now. Well, he said, you make sure when you get back, you talk to your boss. And he kept looking at this bullet and looking at me. He said, you talk to your boss, and I want the labor paid for, too. I said, I'll talk to him. So I got back and I said to my boss, I said, I think I know what you're going to say. This guy wanted the bracket and the labor and everything. He said, hell no. I said, what'd you even pay for the damn bracket for? And I said, well, he did have a gun that he was showing me after all.
And he might have used it.
Well, you never know, you know. Might not have used it there, but he might have.
That's what I'm thinking. Once
somewhere.
You walk away,
I told my boss,
though,
I said, from now on, my expense account in New York is going to be a lot bigger. And he looked at me real indignant and said, why would that be? And I said, well, when I fly in there, usually I get fly in with four-engine airplanes. I said, I'm going to tell them to keep the engines all running. I may be back in a hurry.
Oh, my goodness. Was that a garbage hauler's truck?
Oh, yeah.
See, those guys are tough, aren't they?
They're all mafia.
Well,
you
see,
yeah, they're organized. And you see them blocking the streets in downtown New York, and everybody's screaming because they're piled up behind them in their cars, and they're very independent, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, I could tell you a few other experiences.
Well, go ahead. That's just fun.
Well, this one guy, they had a garbage operation, about five or six, maybe seven trucks, and Hawthorne, New Jersey, and went in and they were going through rear end failures on these trucks like crazy. And I went in and looked, and here was six or seven laying there on the floor. Took one look at them and I could tell what was wrong right away. They had shock loaded the daylights out of those things and broke those parts, you know. And I knew it wasn't a factory defect of any kind.
They got broken there.
Well, yeah, in their operation, you know, they're so abusive. It's just unbelievable how abusive they are, those trucks. And so I talked to the dealer and I said, geez, you know, that doesn't look like a factory defect to me. And he said, well, Dick, he said, well, we got to get this resolved somehow or another. And so finally, the next day I was there, the customer came in, and it was Vito Stamato. I'll never forget him. He was about this tall, and he pointed at me and called me every name in the book. You little something, he said. He's looking up at me.
He's calling you little.
Yeah, he said that after. I said, all I said was, what about your drivers? And that's when he started in on me already. And so I said to the dealer after he left, I said, you know, I got to go see this operation, see what they're doing. So all day long, he put me off. And finally, that's the overnight again. Came back the next morning. I said, hey, when are we going to go look at this operation on this truck? And he says, I'd like to go right out there to the dump site where they dump. And he says, Dick, if you went out there and looked, you wouldn't warranty anything on those trucks for the rest of their life. He said, they're so badly abused. I said, well, dude, how about where they pick up, you know? He said, I don't know, Dick. He didn't want to show me, you know. I said, well, I understand what you're going through. Let's just go look. And sure enough, we went out there and they had a hand brake with the foot brake. And what they would do, they'd take off of the truck wide open, you know, in low gear or second gear or whatever. And then they would just throw that hand brake on and jump right out of the truck, run back and throw the stuff. And by the time the truck got just to the location where it needed to be, they would be dumping their stuff and that. Yeah, that's just, I mean, the brakes, they went brake through brake about every 5,000-6,000 miles.
I would think so.
And then, this was ironic, they were telling the dealer, I'm in the car with the dealer, and they said, oh, every once in a while around here, we hear about a body going in one of these two. And the next place we went to, this guy picked up this whole big thing and threw it in there, and the compression came down. Red stuff ran out all over the place. I don't know if it was blood or paint, but I tell you what, I said, I think I've seen enough. Let's go home.
You're very diplomatic.
Yeah.
No, I bet you got more cooperation because you are.
Yeah. So, and, you know, the thing about it is you have to understand when you're going to sell trucks to those people, they're going to treat them whatever way they want to. And the next day, they had the guy, the Rockwell representative, come in whose axle, the axle that had failed, Rockwell, they had made those axles. So I knew that the dealer said, well, we finally called the Rockwell representative, and he's going to come in with them. So I know how he handled his problem. He drove in, he had his wife with him, he drove up to the front door, had the engine running, walked inside, walked right through, didn't even hardly look, went through and said, I'll buy them all, went right out the door and drove off. I said, well, as long as he says he'll buy them, I don't care.
Yeah, and then he would resupply them?
We'd send a warranty claim and then Rockwell would reimburse us.
Oh, I see. Rockwell International, is
well,
that?
Well, now it is, yeah.
Now it is, it wasn't then. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Well, that was a challenging, interesting job, but I traveled to a lot of places all over the country. California. I had a brother in Seattle I hadn't seen in years, and so when the representative out there was on vacation for 2 weeks, they said, Dick, go out there and travel this district for a while. So I did, and I stopped in Seattle to see my brother for a weekend.
Oh, wasn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it was really fun.
You bet.
I was tired out, though, because every day it was go, 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 you know, and travel and go, 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 and travel. But it was still interesting and fun.
You met a lot of people and helped a lot of things get solved and maybe come up with some new solutions.
Yeah, that was a good thing. I mean, that's what I went out. I went out on one job that had a vibration in it, a truck. That was in that was in New Jersey or someplace too. And I went out there and I was out there for a whole week on this vibration problem and didn't get it solved. So I flew back home, and the next week I went out there. I was working with our local representative that was out there at the time, too.
With whom?
Our local representative.
Oh, local representative.
The regional, John Goka, his name was. And between the two of us, we weren't getting this problem solved. And I called the engineers, and they would tell me what to do this and do that, make these various adjustments. And actually, I went on to the third week. And finally, I told him, I called my boss. I said, wow, you know, I don't know if I can get this fixed. And he says, I said, you know, I need to come home pretty soon. And he said, you know what? He says, you're getting your first education about it, what a technical service representative is. It's a person that goes out and finds a way to solve the problem. I don't care what it is or how you go about it, what education you got to have, you find a way to solve the problem. So he said, Dad, that meant I wasn't going to ever get home if I didn't fix this truck. And so I just really press your mind hard to come up with solutions. And finally, one day I said, you know, this had a main transmission and an auxiliary transmission back here. And I told the guys there, I said, you know, when I look at this thing after all these weeks and stuff and looking at it, I said, I'm sick and tired. I want to go home. So we're going to take that auxiliary transmission. We're going to move it up here and make that angularity of that shaft, so there is no angle to it, and then there's only angles left is on this shaft back here. And when I did that, it solved the problem. Just like
after all that.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Now, if you press yourself hard enough, you'll come up with ways and solutions. The ways and means, or you go to the right people, or something, you know.
What did you say? Because somebody's going to be transcribing this, and they won't know what you said. The regional representative. Did you tell me his name?
John Goga, G-O-G-A.
G-O-G-A.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was the representative for that district, you know, and I would go up from the factory, and they would have problems or solving the problem.
He was someone you could go to.
Yeah.
I think that we have, my questions you have answered in very entertaining fashion. I'm saying, can you recall any humorous events? Well, we have. Problems that you encountered, products you helped to make, your impression of the Real Motor Car Company as you look back.
I thought it was a great place to work with a lot of great people. Very enjoyable place to work, really.
And friends you met there perhaps are still, with us?
Yeah, Tom, you know.
Tom Moorfield?
Tom came up eventually, and you'll find out later, he came up eventually in service to work with me.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Towards the end there. And, you know, Kimball, I knew Ray very well out in the factory, and Larry Ode, all those guys that I worked with out there, and the road testers, and they were tied, we were tied in with the other inspectors, checkout inspectors, and everybody with the SADA team, too. So. Mm.
Ray was telling me about the truck that he was told that Ray Jenks told him to take it out and get it stuck.
Yeah.
And he did. And Ray got furious with him because he got it stuck.
Got it stuck so he couldn't get it out of there for a while.
I know. And so Ray has kept, this is wonderful, he's kept all kinds of paperwork and pictures. And his wife is just the most organized little person. She's a little doll. And mm-hmm. she went right off in their little office and she made Xeroxes of some, and gave me some of them.
Yeah.
As an example, and there's a picture of the truck in the water, and there's also, and he went through several, he's got spiral bound notebooks with stuff in, and I tell you, the man could run our treasury department the way he keeps his records. And he came across the original letter or note that Ray wrote to him, telling him to go out and get it stuck.
Yeah.
He said, and I showed it to him. So I'm having a lot of fun just talking
sure.
with you guys. Is there anything else that I haven't even thought of, I haven't covered, that you'd like to share with anybody? You know, now what we're going to do is keep these tapes here, and unless Jim has another place, he's going to. I think they'll all be housed here because the previous ones that Lisa and I did are here. So anybody that wanting to know about Rio, about the working conditions, about the process of advancement, pay conditions, anything they want to know. Or maybe there's something specific they want to know. Anyway, they can just call out a tape and listen to it, mm-hmm. read the transcript.
Oh,
and
I don't really know anything too much more to add, I guess.
Okay. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
I guess I will ask you, outside of Ray Kimball that you mentioned, is there some of the other workers that you recall working with?
Well, Alex Giannotti, he became a service representative in the field.
Giannotti?
Yeah. And Don Figuer became a repairman on repair floor, and then he became a service representative and later became a sales representative.
Oh.
He was in Florida. Clyde Gregory was in Pennsylvania. Jerry Brinker, he was the one that kind of helped break me in a little bit in the technical service department.
Oh.
And he became national accounts manager for contacting all the UPS people.
For deliveries?
Yeah. Well, you know, for any of the, because we built a lot of trucks for UPS.
Oh, I know. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, too, about military. You mentioned military trucks. Did you have to go to any of the bases to troubleshoot?
No, I was cleared through FBI so that I could.
Well, you were.
But I never had to go to one. So. No. Well, I did that all before when I went in the Army.
Well, I thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you. Nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too.